Charity Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Wednesday, March 25th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown, well, actually, really far from downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Senate strikes a deal for $2 trillion stimulus. Fed has got, I don't know, apparently another $4 trillion it plans to use. Donald Trump wants this thing over in 2.5 weeks, though, folks. He's going to wrap it up. Meanwhile, Trump holds up key unemployment funding for New York and California and Washington. And good news, tiny bit, COVID-19 is not mutating, quickly anyways, and it suggests that a vaccine would be effective. Meanwhile, a little more good news. Colorado abolishes its death penalty. And its profits over people. Trump's failure to use the Defense Production Act or powers has guaranteed more death and suffering. Meanwhile, New Orleans is like a war zone, and New York is the epicenter with 8 to 10 times the infection rate of the country. Modi locks down India, 1.3 billion people told to stay home. Joe Biden speaks. Sanders says he's in for the next debate, if there is one. And remember that heartwarming story of Jerry Falwell Jr. bringing back those Christian students to Liberty University, back into the dorms? As if they were some type of, like, pleasure cruise. Well, it turns out that he sort of lied to the Lynchburg city manager in letting them know that those students were coming back. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yep. Thank you. Wow. Matt, maybe you can fade that a little bit. Is there no way? Brendan still.
I'm going to do the farrago. Running on my computer.
All right. All right. There's Brendan with the sort of very abrupt end of the music.
Signature.
That's a signature. That's everybody, every great artist, whether they're the production artist or a visual artist, they always need to have like one little thing that's theirs. And Brendan's hook is no fade. Never going to use the fade. Never use it. I just don't use it. maybe a very long fade, but we don't know when I'm going to end. That's the problem. No worries. We're doing fine. Sorry about yesterday, folks. We had some internet problems. Hopefully we will not today. You can go back. And if you missed the interview yesterday with Dana Goldthwait, what's her last name? I can't remember now. It was Young. Dana Young. And it was actually very interesting. We got some very nice comments about it from folks. And you should, I think it was nice. It gives you a little bit of sense of like the media environment that we're dealing with now, where you see conservatives, and we didn't really get into really the way they're responding to the coronavirus or the way the media has been playing it. But I think you'll find it interesting, a nice momentary distraction from some of the news of the day. We will get into the Senate deal to the extent that we know what it is. And we'll talk about the Defense the Production Act. Michael will be joining us via Zoom, I think. Or I should say our technology that we don't brand on this show. Why would we? And but first, let me get to the plugs and notices. This is, we're going to change the name of it, the COVID-19 plugs and notices. This is just a way for us to provide some links to you to some sites that might be helpful to you in this time. And I don't know. I'm constantly reading about this stuff, and I guess I'm following people who have been posting some really interesting stuff. But I've had people who said this has been very helpful to them, and so we're going to keep doing this. Do we have music, or do you want me to? It's tough when I send it, right? So okay, all right. Well, that's fine. Then let's start the COVID-19 plugs and notices for Wednesday, March 25th. According to data from nearly 56,000 laboratory confirmed COVID-19 patients in China, the rundown of common symptoms went as follow. 88% had a fever. 68% had a dry cough. 38% had fatigue. 33% coughed up phlegm. 19% had shortness of breath. 15% had joint or muscle pain. 14% had a sore throat. 14% had a headache. 11% had chills. And then it was a small percentage with nausea and nasal congestion and diarrhea and coughing up blood, less than 1%. But so the bottom line is, if you don't have a fever, there's a good chance you don't have COVID-19. However, there's a small chance that you could. And we've got a link to Ars Technica, where this is from. There's they have a very good guide there, and it's worth checking out. We'll put that link in our description. Also, you should know that the German Federal Institute for Risk Assessment reports that it is also possible, but unlikely, that the virus could be spread through smear infection. In these cases, a healthy person would touch a contaminated surface with their hands, say a can of soup, a touchscreen ATM, or subway turnstile, then transfer the virus to their eyes or nose. There's been no known cases of this method of transfer. It's thought to be less likely than someone like coughing on you or sneezing on you or you actually touching a droplet. But washing your hands before touching your face, wearing gloves, reduces that likelihood. Still better safe than sorry. And you can go to SeriousEats.com. We put the link there. That gives you a comprehensive guide to give you a sense of how much risk you're taking or not when you order out food. Apparently, it's not nearly as much as one would anticipate. But check that out. And again, better safe than sorry. There's no reason not to be as safe as you can. If you want to donate to New York City hospitals, they desperately need all sorts of PPEs. What do they call that? Personal protection equipment. You can do so. We got a link there from thecity.nyc online independent news site. How can I donate supplies to New York hospitals? There's a couple of different ways of doing this. They seem to be taking just about anything. So, I mean, if you have like a half a dozen, I don't know, scrubs for whatever reason, or masks or whatnot, and you feel comfortable donating them, they certainly need them. Also, you should know, as a note, according to Scott Gottlieb, a doctor, there was an interview of him on, I'm not sure where that was, but 56% of hospitalized patients in New York City are under the age of 50. Don't know specific numbers, but a lot who are in ICUs are 30s, 40s, and 50s. So, again, be careful, regardless of your age. Some plugs. I work at Costco on Long Island, writes Anthony. I just want to see if you give a shout out to all the hardworking employees who go to work despite everything that's going on. Also, please inform people to stay home. We're exposed to thousands of people a day who could be carrying this virus and not know it, and they need to shop. Please have them respect the limits on items that are put in place so that everyone has an opportunity to get what they need. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of emails from folks who are working in supermarkets or they're working at a place like Costco. Do them a favor. Keep away. Like, keep 6 feet away. They have to work. And just keep your distance so that they don't have to be jerks about it. And I mean, honestly, and if you see other people who are not keeping their distance, say, keep your distance so that these people who are working get some relief and respect, you know, don't take all the toilet paper. This is from Ricardo. He says, I'm a psychotherapist. I want to offer low sliding scale fees to Majority Report listeners in California. I'm lucky to not really have my business affected by the virus, except I see everyone online now. So he wants to make psychotherapy accessible to as people as their household incomes fall or they get laid off. We have his link in the description of this. It's ricardo@robelstherapy.com. He's using a sliding scale that he used as an intern in 2013. If your household income is zero to 500, it's $25, 500 to 1,000, 35, and so on. So very reasonable rates. Check that out. That'll be in the listings. Also, in Houston, Verdigreens is a one-acre urban farm in Houston. They're partnering with other local growers to offer a farm box full of fresh organic produce. You can pick it up at three drop locations around town. Verdigreens.com. Verdigreens.com. Check it out. That's from David. Also, Disc Makers, writes Michael from Philadelphia, company he works for. They've been in the business for 73 years, helping independent artists create their CDs, DVDs, T-shirts, etc. They are basically now stopping to make discs or whatever machines they have there, and they're now making masks. And they're going to apparently donate them. So shout out to them. Big Mark for Senate. Mark Bignell is an over-the-road truck driver, a progressive candidate for Michigan State Senate. Susan wants us to plug his site. You can check out bigmarkforsenate.com. Check that out. And that is our plugs and our COVID-19 plugs and notices for the day. We put these on YouTube, and you can check over there, and all the links are included in these descriptions. And I believe we also have them in the podcast. So check these places out, get some more information, help them. That's that for today. So, Michael, are you there with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How is everything on your end? All well?
On my end, it's fine. There was some maneuvering around a family member that we needed to take care of, but I think we've sort of cooled that out for at least another month. So that's good. And, so far, thankfully everybody's healthy. The virus is close, guys. I mean, you know, people are getting it in not too far extended networks. So please be extraordinarily careful if possible.
Yeah, for that. And if you guys, I have a little treat for you, Michael, that you may have missed. And did you guys get that audio I sent you to your email, Matt? Maybe you can look for that as I just do this ad. Because
Sorry. Do the ad, and then I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I'll plug that that bill in New York.
Okay.
I ordered some of this today, folks, and sadly, I didn't know the new code. But that's all right. I'm happy to. I didn't know the new Majority Report code. I kept trying, so I ended up just putting it in the "How did you hear about us?" podcast, Majority Report. But half of Americans report they fight with daily fatigue. Also, one of the great ways right now to take care of yourself: stay hydrated. Very easy to forget and get out of your things. Well, Liquid IV is the way that I do this. And I've actually sent some care packages to friends and family. And Liquid IV Energy Multiplier gives you sustained energy throughout the day. It's a great all-natural alternative to processed energy drinks. The premium matcha and green energy blend tastes delicious and provides a lasting energy boost throughout the day. It's like a couple cups of coffee without the crash. Liquid IV's Energy Multiplier contains a mixture of teas and herbs that are high in antioxidants also help improve mood and focus without any artificial flavors or preservatives. The cellular transport technology delivers enhanced rapid absorption into the bloodstream. Jesus. Like Joe Biden today. It gives you a boost fast, and it's a non-GMO, vegan, and free, and I forget, you guys know the rest. Gluten, dairy, and soy free. Like I say, I literally ordered some for friends and family this morning at 7 a.m. I woke up and I was like, everybody needs to be hydrated. I'm sending them. And then I ordered myself some of the green matcha, and I didn't even use the right coupon code. I couldn't find it. I went to our site. I'm like, why isn't it working? And I'll tell you why. Because when you get you go to liquidiv.com, you can get 25% off. Like I did not today, but it's still worth it for me. But go to liquidiv.com, get 25% off when you use the code MajorityRep. I don't know what happened to the ORT part, but it's just MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order at Liquid IV's website. Go to liquidiv.com. Like I say, I was happy to pay the extra 25%. I want this stuff. I don't care. But you can save 25% by using the code MajorityRep and get better hydration and energy. Don't wait. Start fueling your adventures and, frankly, your health today. So check that out. Michael wanted to plug that in New York, where the governor, I guess, basically said, yeah, we're going to forgive mortgage payments or give you, it's not forgive, but we're going to give you, defer them.
Defer them.
But not for rent.
Not for rent.
Which is a little stunning. I mean, I guess the idea, I don't know. I mean, in the best light, it's just like, oh, well, we won't allow eviction proceedings to go forward. But why cause this type of stress with people?
Yeah. And also, you know, there's emails and texts that people are sending across social media of, you know, landlords basically saying it's your obligation in the beginning of the month. Nothing changes. It's an enormous toll psychologically. It's horrible. And Senator Giannaris has a bill that's at least the start. It would be a 3-month rent suspension. I believe it applies to people who are unemployed. And I think it also has a provision for small businesses. Again, I would go for something a lot more comprehensive, but it's significant and it's a start. And the switchboard for the New York State Senate is 518-455-2800. And you can just put in your zip code if you don't know your rep. And I just want to say two other things really quickly about this. I've been doing a lot of calls the last couple of days and encouraging people to do that. And, you know, I will obviously say anything about these people on this show, but be extremely polite when you're calling these folks. And, people, tweet out talking points and stuff like that can be helpful to kind of have a plan for what you're going to say. And also, as horrible as things are, they actually, like, I know somebody, she left a message, they called her back. When you get on the phone, even for 2 minutes, you would be shocked at how much that registers. Now, is that as powerful as all the lobbyists? Obviously not, but it's not nothing. So if you're, you know, take a minute and do it.
I can tell you this, that when I worked in Congress as an intern many, 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 many years ago, this is pre-email, this is pre-cell phones and whatnot, there was basically an algorithm for every form letter you get, that's worth X number of people who are constituents. For every handwritten letter, it would go up. For every, you know, phone call, it was another figure. And so to take the time to call, particularly in this day and age where they get a ton of emails that are form emails that people have cut and pasted, but when you call and you're polite and reasonable, like I would be surprised if they don't have a rating system for how crazy you come off as.
Totally.
And so in other words, if you come off as, you know, being just very polite, reasonable, you know, and that has, you're increasing the value of that call. And New York is, like we said, is literally the epicenter right now. And I will say this. If for other places where we see these problems, solutions that are designed in New York will become the benchmark. You will not get solutions in the rest of the country that are going to be better than what we have in New York. I mean, rarely, maybe in a couple of narrow areas. But New York is, you know, the benchmark. And California, I imagine, too. But New York is really being hit hard right now.
Yeah. And just really reiterate, when I called on a national level, I called Schumer and Gillibrand, and this was 48 hours ago, and they had rejected, you know, the McConnell travesty. And I think what I think of Schumer and Gillibrand is no mystery to anybody, but just really to reiterate this politeness point, I started by thanking them. Thank you for killing that terrible bill. Now I have the following requests. Appreciate your work. You know, definitely not a time for any polemics.
Yes, exactly. All right. Now, do we have this clip that, this was sent in, was it by a listener? What did I write in the email? Was it the listener of, what was the name of listener? Daniel from Norway, not the guy in the, TMBS Discord. Apparently he was very adamant about saying that.
Okay.
But he, on the first day that, or second day that, that we went on air, I had, real problems, with the audio.
Yeah.
And apparently, I didn't know that my mic was hot. And so listen, folks,
Say this. I think like half a dozen people sent this to me, but I will still enjoy it.
Okay. It's very short. And, if you have kids, you might want to close their ears. Okay, here we go.
Damn it. Fucking damn it. Fucking damn it. It's not the thing that I'm looking at.
Oh boy. And that music, I think, was just tied into it. I mean, that was the thing, is that music fits that perfectly, actually.
Was actually, somebody didn't layer that music on? That was,
no, that's the
on?
Music that, with that, that's the music that, that's Dave Derby music that we can use for breaks.
I've heard it, but
that's what it sounded like, yeah.
I didn't know that was, I thought someone mashed up the music you had been using with.
I'm pretty sure that music was what was actually playing.
Yeah, I hadn't listened to it before, but that was just pretty much what happened live.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that was mixed. Maybe cut it together, but I'm pretty sure it was just like at one point people were like, "Hey, your mic is hot."
That's good for everybody's immune system. I love it, and nothing brings it brings me great joy to hear. And then there's always like 10% of me that does care about you and is like, Jesus Christ, is this the moment?
Oh, believe me.
Like, don't have a stroke, please.
Oh, the strokes are happening. The strokes are happening. They're not even related to what actually goes on here. It's basically what goes on outside here that is going to give me a stroke. All right, but let's get into the Senate deal. This is the way it seems to be working, is that, I mean, Nancy Pelosi has another deal for another bill for $2.5 trillion. I think that they came up with that just to sort of like add some pressure and give Chuck Schumer theoretically some leverage in his negotiations with McConnell. I think what we're going to see is this Senate bill is going to be passed by the House in absentia. And in fact, what they may do is some type of like voice roll call, I mean, voice, vote over, I guess, a speakerphone or something like that. I don't know. Maybe they'll do it all on Zoom. I have no idea. But they don't want to bring all the Congress people back to D.C. just for the sake of taking this vote when they can actually just maybe do it over the phone. I'm going to run down what we know is in it to a certain extent, but we were talking about this before. Matt Stoller, you know, made a very good point in something that his email blast big, that what we hear at this point in the process, like this is one of those situations. I said this yesterday. You're not going to know what's in the bill until it passes, and really, you're not going to know what's in the bill until it passes, and then a little time passes. And people start to dig through it and see what's in there. Because what happens on bills like this, particularly something that is massive, it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Everybody puts something in there. And in a lot of times, the people who might have a problem with a given provision don't even necessarily see that provision. They see it, but it doesn't register them like what could be problematic about it because of the way that it's written. And so each person who wants something from this steps up, devises language that looks like they're not getting it, or essentially, and then, you know, lobbies to get that in the bill and, you know, does like, well, it's just a thing for the thing, you know, just do that. And if it doesn't, you know, scream at you, that's the way these things get in there. So, and presumably staffers understand the implications of all this stuff, but there was also clearly the reason why this is $2 trillion is because there was a little bit of like, I say yes to you, you say yes to me. And of course, what inevitably happens is the Republicans are always more like, okay, as long as we have that dynamic and we're going to ask for everything we want, and you're just going to ask for about, you know, maybe a third of what you want. And that's the way that this works. But as of now, it is $2 trillion. $500 billion in federal funding for big businesses and municipalities. A lot of that is business. There's a $500 billion loan program for businesses, the details of which we don't know. There's supposedly oversight of this, like some type of independent body that existed during the bailout in 2008, for whatever that's worth. $50 billion was allotted to passenger airlines. Unclear again what the what the strings were attached to this. I have a feeling it wasn't much, but I mean we'll get a better sense of that. But there is an inspector general in the Treasury Department who's going to oversee these funds. There's going to be a congressional oversight panel to examine how the money is being used. And the big thing that Schumer, Michael, this is like a classic Chuck Schumer thing. He's so proud of this. I got him.
leg room.
Schumer's office announced they secured a provision that will prohibit the businesses controlled by the president, the vice president, members of Congress, and heads of executive departments from receiving loans or investments from Treasury programs. The children, spouses, or in-laws of lawmakers and executive officials also cannot receive these loans. Now, this isn't going to stop them.
Yeah, I mean, it's of course not. And I mean, we've got a Treasury slush fund, essentially, with people like Steve Mnuchin overseeing it. I think my big, and this would just be politically impossible, but could you imagine if the Democratic negotiating position was, and forget even the various levels of left to center right position in the Democratic Party, but they just said, look, this is your fault. You engaged in criminal negligence on this for weeks. You're going to get punished because there's going to be thousands of unnecessary deaths conservatively, and the economy is going to take a body blow. So you need to sit down and listen. And here's what we're going to do. We need to have one bill that we pass first. And maybe it's, you know, whatever. Obviously, there's me. I want Medicare for all. I want a real comprehensive bill. Whatever. Not even that. Some type of basic cash transfers, radically increased unemployment. We are going to take care of people first. And then in another couple of weeks, we can figure out what this bailout's going to be. As long as you have the population hostage, you can push through, you know, whatever the lobbyists want. And obviously, whatever the lobbyists want is most extreme with Republicans, but it goes for most parties. And yeah, we're going to see. I mean, I'll stop wearing Adidas for a couple of weeks, although they were less flagrant. They wanted some. They wanted you to be able to use some rebate for a gym membership. The Mars Candy Corporation wants. I mean, we're just going to see, as you said, when the bill's finally out there and we're reading it, we're just going to see endless. From comical to egregious.
Well, I want to just take the tactical thing a step further. I mean, one of the problems that the Democrats have in this situation is that the polling so far, and I think this has been a failure of the Democrats, and frankly, you know, like a failure of Biden as the, you know, so-called presumptive nominee. On some level, he should have been out there earlier. He's still not, you know, sort of having any type of like pointed a discussion of this in any way. And he's the guy who supposedly would get the attention to do this. But the polling is, you know, does not reflect that premise that you started off with.
Well, no, I'm saying an alternative play starting a month ago. Well, I mean, yeah, I think, but, of course, I said a month ago, I'm not convinced that this is what finally hurts Trump, because I don't have the confidence in them to play this right. And that's the timeline we're on now.
And we'll see by the end, but
we'll see by the end.
But as right now, they don't have that ability to do. And the second thing is, though, is that the problem with doing this type of omnibus bill is just what Michael said, because if you tie in relief to people with relief to businesses, the leverage shifts. But if you basically said, if Nancy Pelosi had come up first with a package, we have two packages. Package number one is we're providing extended unemployment. We're expanding SNAP, where, you know, we're giving, you know, whatever it is, $2,000 a month to adults, and $2,500 a month if they have kids, or whatever it is. We provide whatever that package is. If that is separate, and then we also have a business relief bill, two separate bills, so that the pressure then becomes like, oh, you're not going to pass this one for people. This one's got to come first. But when you combine them together, then all of a sudden the leverage shifts. And now look, that may be the argument against that is like, well, it'll slow the process down. But I also think it could be that, you know, maybe there's a pressure on the Democrats to feed these troughs a little bit too.
That's the structural problem, is that the Democrats are obviously mostly just as complicit in a lot of this type of very specific thing. You know, in terms of the sort of corporate, you know, giveaways. But, you know, at some point, and I think that's the reason we don't see this from the Democratic Party. I don't think it's timidity. I think it's their own compromise in the process. But I have to say, on a tactical level, I think at some point we need to, you know, we can always explain why they might not take a bold move, and they never do. And at some point we have to see, like, if she did that and Schumer did that 3 weeks or a month ago and it backfired, well, that would give us new information. But we have always is that they don't make moves like that. And we're in a situation now where Trump is in the 50s in terms of handling this. The talking points about getting people back to work are scientifically insane and totally immoral. But during that window of time where it didn't even look like any help was coming, and now we know the help will be pretty insufficient, I see the political appeal of that rhetoric. I mean, you know, to certain people, like, hey, I got to go work. You know, I don't have any money. So, you know, it is regardless of ideology, it's very dangerous to not have a properly functioning opposition party. And I really hope people, even who have different politics than me, can register that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would have been reasonable to expect them to try this a month ago. I mean, a month ago was
two weeks ago. There was a time even Politico, I forget, Waldman in Politico 2-3 weeks ago was like, Nancy Pelosi is not acting on the leverage she has.
2 weeks ago, I agree. Things have moved so fast.
So let's say 2 weeks ago.
A month ago, let's say today, a month today, actually, was the debate prior to the last debate prior to Super Tuesday.
So, well, yeah, right. It wasn't on
when everybody was on stage.
Yeah, it wasn't on anybody's radar.
I was bemoaning, like, they're not talking about coronavirus at all. And everybody's like, yeah, well, you know, whatever.
Let's say 2 weeks ago. Let's say 2 weeks ago.
I mean, I think that they should have had something like this. But I will say this, and let me just go through this a little bit more and say at least what we know are the headline things. This is not the end of it. They're going to come back. They're going to be back in 3 weeks.
Of course.
With the fourth. I mean, remember, this is stage three, essentially. There were two other bills that were already passed that presumably were providing aid. Nobody even remembers what they were because they're so insufficient. I'm convinced this is going to be insufficient as well, frankly. But we shall see. This slush fund does have more oversight than just Mnuchin, but I don't know how effective that's going to be. The new bill will increase unemployment insurance by $600 a week for 4 months. The money is in addition to what states pay as a base for unemployment. And this benefit would extend to gig economy workers, presumably contractors, freelancers. And on top of that, workers who were out of work, furloughed, but still on their health insurance program from their employers, but are not receiving a paycheck. I don't know what we do for folks who are not, are outside of those windows, but I imagine we would need to have something like an expanded SNAP and other supports.
The Reshida bill. $2,000 a month for everybody for a year. I think it's as simple as that.
Schumer also said, here we go. And $150 billion for hospitals treating coronavirus patients. Of that money, $100 billion will go to hospitals. $1 billion will go to the Indian Health Service. The remainder will be raised to increase medical equipment capacity. So that $100 billion is presumably because some of these hospitals are saying that they simply don't have the cash to buy the equipment that they need. Schumer also said...
I'm sorry. I've heard that the House version essentially has, I think Matt Brunig said, the Senate version does not have, but the House version essentially has Medicare for all corona in the sense of, you know, a kind of complete expansion that, look, if you have a question about this specific disease, you're covered. The Senate bill doesn't have that. Do we have a sense of that?
It doesn't say anything to that effect at all. So it's possible, but we don't know yet.
Yeah. Okay.
Schumer said $150 billion of the federal money would be allocated for state and local governments who are dealing with the impacts of the crisis in the local communities, completely insufficient, including $8 billion for tribal governments. That means that the other $350 or so will be going to businesses. Mm-hmm. The legislation would include, here we go, and this is not, again, insufficient, but it is at least a stab, and it is sort of, I mean, right now, what these things are doing are creating a structure that later become the baseline for the second tranche. I mean, it's hard to imagine, if you've got to come back to this, that it's going to be less the next time.
Right.
A one-time check, $1,200, sent to most adults, making $75,000 less or less annually. That's according to past tax returns. That is unhelpful if you were making $100,000 and you have no job as of a week or two ago. A $500 payment would also be sent to cover every child in qualifying households. I mean, the problem you're going to have there is that if you've lost your job, I mean, maybe the unemployment will pick up on that. And maybe theoretically you have saved enough money, but $1,200 one time is just not going to do it anyways.
And also we have to consider, you know, prisoners that are being released and undocumented people. And again, regardless of even a moral stance, if you want to look at it this way, I mean, these are, you know, these are populations, like, you're dealing with a pandemic. You need to help people protect and insulate themselves in the context of a pandemic, period.
Right. I mean, New York just released 300 prisoners. They need to release more. But then what?
Yeah, no, there's no provision.
The final policy on that front marks a significant change from the direct payments initially proposed by Republicans, who would have given less to many individuals who do not have taxable income. So, in other words, they were making their bailout regressive. Yep. There's $367 billion in the bill aimed at providing loans for small businesses. This is according to the Washington Post. I don't know what that really means. But
that's an important one, right? I mean, cause I think, like, we actually do need to, there's plenty of people who have, like, actual small businesses, like one shop, and no, I know you support that, and we need to get them money. And we need, because those businesses actually provide enormous value. And to the extent we have even a piddling counter monopoly in this country, it rests on those in a lot of cases. And, you know, I would not be surprised if, you know, in a couple of months we're saying, why did Citibank get a small business loan? Oh, well, they loan money that goes to small businesses.
Right, right. Well, my understanding of the initial drafts of this was that a portion of that was basically a grant. Mm. That was, if you borrow money to payroll your people who are payrolled, that there's loan forgiveness built into that. That was just the we're going to have to wait to see what the details are. But the idea is it's a backdoor way of paying money. Now, it is reminiscent of what they have decided to do. I think it's in, is it Denmark? They, if you can believe it, in Denmark, they basically said to employers, we will cover 90% of your payroll for 4 weeks. We'll do it for a month, 90% covered. If you pay your workers to go home.
Yep.
And you pay them to go home, we'll cover 90% of it. And we will cover some percentage of, like, a similar percentage of your rent, of your fixed overhead costs. So as a small business, you're shut down. You're paying out maybe, I don't know, what comes down to maybe 8% of your costs or something to carry your business forward for a month. And that's what they're doing across the board. And I imagine, you know, they already have stuff in place already for folks who are not working. You know, I mean, that's one of
these. We also did this weeks ago. I mean, you know, it's just better governance. I mean, you know, South Korea, there are just these examples of, and it's very important. I like that it's really important to politicize these examples, because we get these little, like, explainers, you know, occasionally, like, hey, look at South Korea, they've got these amazing mobile tests. In Denmark, that's a nifty idea. And it's like, well, they're able to do that because in South Korea's case, they have comprehensive, you know, they have single payer plus, and, you know, Denmark has a social democracy. You know, this isn't just like, oh, they're a little bit more technically proficient than we are. They have better, you know, they have a context to do these things. You know, in the Thomas Friedman column, where he's making the upmarket argument that Trump's making to go back to work, he keeps kind of covering his ass with, like, oh, of course we need, like, rapidly deployed resources to hospitals and, you know, and get the testing problem solved. And it's like, well, how, Tom?
Right. Yeah. Well, and one of the things too, we should say, just about in terms of the Denmark example and South Korea for that matter, and frankly, almost all the countries that we talk about, it's hard for me to imagine that we're talking about any that the challenge that we have is that they all start from a baseline where they provide enough social services that they're in some instances they're just topping off, right? Like they can step up and say, we're going to go big here 90% of your employees, we're going to pay you, we're going to reimburse you. No, not even reimburse. We're going to front you 90% of the cost of paying your employees to stay home. We're going to pay you up front your rent for a month. And they don't have to worry about the who falls in the cracks because those people are already taken care of. And so it makes dealing with a crisis like this that much easier to withstand. I mean, I think like this is what is we're going to see, and we're, you know, people should understand we are at the beginning of this, and there may be different places where the, you know, it spikes and drops, but we're at the beginning of this. If you combine both the health and the economic questions, and we just don't know where it's going to go from here. I mean, New York has accelerated very, very quickly. And it is becoming, you know, clearer that the response should have been sooner. And maybe part of it is just like, there's nobody in there. There's no federal authorities saying like, you guys got a problem in our biggest city. And frankly, I think Donald Trump was like, screw him. I mean, that's the way that the Republican Party treated New York prior to 9/11. And I think we've like returned to the means, as it were.
He's not right. Going to take care of any place he lost.
Well, let's look at this clip. This is clip number two. Okay. And when we talk about, look, one of the things, I don't know if we learned this or, you know, but it was quite clear, and maybe we didn't necessarily feel it in a visceral level. One of the examples that people were using in the context of the impeachment hearings to try and make people understand the stakes that were involved in this. And for the American people writ large, it was difficult to sort of accept this because, you know, we don't pay attention to things that happen, you know, to other countries. And for the left, on some level, I think it was difficult for them to appreciate this because, you know, I don't like the idea of funding war. But one of the examples that people would use is like, imagine if New Orleans or, you know, Florida was hit with a tsunami and Donald Trump said, you're not going to get any aid unless you do me some favors. Well, that was, and I know, I'm so old that I remember when people used that as an example in January. But when you hear about the failure of the federal government to provide ventilators, to provide personal protection services, to warn municipalities and states and provide some type of cohesive coordination in terms of response to this whole thing, when you hear the story of Donald Trump, when the states, when Washington State, when California, and when New York declare a state of emergency, what they are calling for is for one of the reasons why they do that is because it makes them eligible for expanded unemployment insurance. And the White House has been holding up that money. That federal funding has been, they have been sitting on it and they have not released it. And so when you hear that metaphor, that example, that analogy being used in the current context of impeachment, and you think, well, that's just theoretical. Welcome to 2 months later when it's not. Play this clip.
I have 50 governors on the call at the same time. No, I think we're doing very well. But, you know, it's a two-way street. They have to treat us well also. They can't say, oh, gee, we should get this. We should get that. We're doing a great job, like in New York, where we're building, as I said, four hospitals, we're literally building hospitals and medical centers. And then I hear that, you know, there's a problem with ventilators. Well, we sent them ventilators, and they could have had 15 or 16,000. All they had to do is order them 2 years ago, but they decided not to do it. They can't blame us for that.
There he is. They got to be nice to us. What? I got to get good press. Or you don't get your little goody goodies, like things that save people's lives. I mean, this guy's a psychopath. Yeah. No, I'm not. I mean, that's not a news. You know, it's not breaking news. I don't need to.
I think in a way, I actually think in a way, especially for people on, the different parts of the left that I think have been, absolutely critical and correct in most of their takes about the resistance, and absolutely correct in their takes about, various corporate media and so on. I think actually in a way it's time to, especially for people who haven't been just repeating the same thing about Trump for 2 years, it's actually time to kind of come full circle and actually say, especially if you haven't been beating the same drum and you've been talking about a lot of different things like we do on this show, to actually remind everybody that it's not just, cynical Democratic leaders or people don't even have a plan for actually beating this guy. that in fact, he is a psychopath, right? Yes, it's a product of larger forces. There's bigger questions to take on. The situation's more complex than any individual. And yeah, you have a guy who is a personal psychopath at the head of a, I think we could call this system psychopathic in many respects, frankly. But it's important to get a little bit of a refresher course on this and not just, because you're right. It's sort of like, what else is new, Sam? Donald Trump is holding up ventilators because people, Andrew Cuomo isn't saying that he's a Roman god. You're really surprised by this? But we actually should take a moment to be like, yeah, that actually is kind of surprising. It's pretty effed up.
Right. I'm an American nationalist. I only care about our citizens. But unless they're mean to me, if they're not saying the right thing, if you come at the king and you don't bring the proper tribute, I'm a good king, but I'm not that good.
I also would say, though, just apropos of nothing, because it speaks to my fears, I think it's a good time to start telling Donald Trump, regardless of what you think of him, whether you think he's a psychopath or a good nationalist leader. Why is Bill Barr so disrespectful to him at press conferences?
Yeah, exactly.
He makes very weird faces while he talks. He never looks professional. I want a handsome attorney general. I don't know about you.
He looks a little schlubby.
Does not look the part. And I think Donald Trump should know this.
I don't think we have a clip of this, but apparently I imagine Boeing ended up getting their money.
Boeing, I believe Jeff Stein said there's a national security provision that is giving Boeing I think $17 billion.
Hmm.
Yep.
Well, Boeing chief executive David Calhoun yesterday was on Fox Business Network. And we do have the Boeing clip. Okay. Yeah, here's the clip of David Calhoun. This is just sort of like, it's really stunning because let's play the clip and you can check here and give me your impression of it. But this guy, David Calhoun, is CEO. Remember, just a little backstory on Boeing. They, instead of redesigning their Max, their 737 Max commercial airplane, what happened was airports around the world changed the way that they would build their walkways so they could maximize space at the airports. And the walkways were such that the way that Boeing's planes were designed, their engines were positioned in the wrong way. And to accommodate these new walkways, they had two choices. One choice was redesign their planes to make a big investment in their whole fleet so that they wouldn't have this issue. The other was to do sort of like a small structural tweak and then make up the rest in software that would change the way that the planes, they could do a little bit of fixing and retrofitting on these planes. But that would require, in certain circumstances, on the 737s to have, because of the way they were designed, have a specific software that had them, change their flight pattern a little bit when they land, something to that effect. But it was basically they wanted to avoid having to spend money in the redevelopment of their planes to make them actually function in the way that they're supposed to function, because that would have gotten in the way of their massive stock buybacks. And again, we're back to stock buybacks. And the problem is not just it's not just the fact that when you buy back your stocks, it is stock manipulation. The problem is that this is the way the CEOs and the board of directors get paid. And it's also the way that they basically bribe their shareholders to allow them to get paid this way.
It's also great. Every time you hear some talking point from like a John Mackey, who's like, hey, I take $1 a year. I mean, I don't know what John Mackey's stock buybacks are, so maybe I shouldn't use him as an example. But anytime these guys talk about I'm taking a pay cut, or I as CEO or whatever, you know, we receive this salary, that's not telling you the full story of how compensation works at these companies.
Oh, absolutely. They get compensated. Very often, the majority of their compensation is through stocks that ultimately vest, or bonuses that are a function of the stock price.
Right.
And they get that money. It's taxed at a lower rate because it's capital gains.
Yep.
And so they're running, again, they're running like a cottage industry, like a side business. It's almost like, you know, Michael and I are playing, poker. Michael, Matt, and I are playing poker, and Brendan's on the side going like, I got a side bet. But I get a side bet with both of them, and I can look at their cards. And that's basically what's going on. And, you know, he's just putting down like, oh, Michael's going to win this one. I'll bet you $5. And he's looking at the cards.
Right.
That's what's going on. And it's perverting the incentives of these companies. So they do stuff like, and you get stuff like the 737 MAX. And here's this guy. Now, apparently he needs a bailout, but not so bad.
The idea that government will have an equity.
Don't have a need for an equity stake. I don't. That's never what we've been.
I know,
to
but if they force it, but what? But do you think they would force it counterbalance to assistance?
If they force it, we just look at all the other options, and we've got plenty of them. So it's not. It's just not ideal for us or our suppliers and all of those companies spread throughout the United States. It's not ideal if we don't have it. But if they attach too many things to it, of course you take a different course.
Okay.
So no bailout.
Yeah. I mean,
no bailout.
If you're in a position where you're like, well, if they're going to actually require something in return for this money, we've got plenty of other options. Well, then why are you here with your hand out? If you got plenty of other options, you know what I say? Use them. Take them. Don't take my tax dollars. I don't need my tax dollars to make sure that you can make more money. If I don't care how important your business is, if you're just sitting up there telling us that what we got other options, well, here's what I would suggest. Exercise those other options, because those tax dollars can go somewhere else for where there are no other options. Like somebody who hasn't the money to pay their rent. Somebody who doesn't have the money to pay for their food. Somebody who doesn't have the money to pay for their medical bill.
I mean, it's outrageous. And again, this is, you know, in a world of the proper functioning democracy, frankly, this would have been larded up. Any bailout package would have frankly had onerous. It would have had equity stakes. It would have had, I want to see, particularly in the airline industry, I want to see worker boards. I want, you know, at least half the boards, if not more, workers. I want to see, you know, an end to stock buybacks, all of these things. And then if a company actually is like, all right, we need it, then okay, you've earned yourself a bailout. I believe you.
Exactly. I mean, you got to put, I mean, that the way that you filter out as to who really needs this is you put onerous obligations on that
money.
That's
it. That's it. It's a simple, I mean, it's like kind of like, I mean, it's like a, I don't even know what the analogy is, but it's like, hey, I want to lend, I want you to, you know, I don't know, lend me 30 grand. There'll be oversight and I'll get it back to you at some point in the future. It's totally unenforceable. And if you make me say, you know, if you make me sign a contract that I'm using it for what I'm saying I'm using it for, I got other options.
Bye. Exactly. One last thing. This piece by Jordan Weissman in Slate on who we specifically should not bail out. And I'm quite convinced there must be some cruises that go to like some type of Trump resort or something, but totally. He was basically said like, he was happy to bail out airlines, hotel industries, et cetera, et cetera. And, I should say airline, my daughter keeps texting me. She's worried about, the Wi-Fi here because it cut out. And I'm just going to tell her, I know it has been, sweetie. Oh, wait, I just tried to do it. Hold on, let me just tell her right now, just so she stops texting me. It's fine now. This is a little bit distracting. In fact, I've stopped my show, so please stop. I love you.
Oh, that's good. Well yeah, done.
That's the way you got to do it. Well done. And okay, so bailing out the cruise industry, which I am sure Donald Trump is keyed in on, because there's no doubt, like, well, the Carnival pulls up at Mar-a-Lago or whatever. I'm sure there's something like that. I'm sure of it. First off, not only was apparently like the cruise liners, as it is for a lot of these type of things, sort of like ground zero, as it were.
They're cesspools. Spreading
cesspools. Well, petri dish is really
petri
the
dish,
more.
Excuse
I think
me.
The
yeah, they're petri dish. That's right.
And what was amazing, which I was not aware of, is that they completely dropped the ball on doing any type of screening. In fact, it gets worse than that. So after it was clear that coronavirus was spreading around the world, passenger screening was limited. Now, everybody knows, like, norovirus. Like, I didn't even know you could catch that off a boat. Like, I didn't even know it existed off a boat. Like, this is where people get these things. And even on cruises where officials knew of positive tests, such as the Grand Princess, strict quarantines confining passengers to their rooms were not imposed immediately. Inconsistent deboarding procedures also meant thousands of passengers who traveled on a ship that had carried a passenger who tested positive for the coronavirus went home with little or no medical screening, possibly taking the virus back to their communities.
You can't confine people on karaoke night, Sam.
Exactly.
Be reasonable.
This is even worse. This is even worse. After initially insisting that no restrictions were needed in recent days, this is from Politico, the cruise industry has presented a plan to the White House to bar the elderly from cruising over coronavirus risks. That's great. But Politico reported, but that hasn't stopped some sales managers from using dubious sales tactics, including Norwegian Cruise Lines, which reportedly encouraged sales reps to lie about to potential customers with fantastical pitch lines. Quote, the coronavirus can only survive in cold temperatures, so the Caribbean is a fantastic choice for your next cruise.
The Cuban doctors are getting deployed. Like, Jamaica has, I think, I don't know how, maybe 100 cases now. They just reported in Haiti. It's in Dominica. Oh, my.
But I mean, can you imagine?
That's just incredible. That is criminal.
It's
criminal.
It
I don't even know what else to say about that.
Apparently, this was a list of talking points put together by sales managers in the Miami office. This is according to the Miami New Times. Now, like you say, if this is true, this is criminal. And well, like the idea that like what if people just catch it on the way down to the cruise? Like, you know, or like in the first, like when you leave, like it's just
the absurd. Heat, the heat trails from the Caribbean coast automatically attach themselves to somebody as soon as they book a Caribbean cruise, and it creates a buffer. On the way down to the boat, you're actually getting propelled by a Caribbean breeze that protects you from all viruses.
And one wonders if Trump didn't say, you know, it wasn't like a consulting on this. Well, it's going to be warm.
So yeah, it's warm. You don't get it.
You don't get
That's
it.
Why nobody from Jamaica's ever died of a virus.
Never. he goes on. And then this part, which I did not know either. The three top cruise lines, Carnival, Royal Caribbean, and Norwegian, are all based in Miami. They flag their ships in foreign tax havens like Panama, Bermuda, and Liberia, which allows them to avoid U.S. corporate taxes, and do an end run around domestic labor laws, which is why apparently they have few Americans working on the ships because their labor practice is so crappy that they can only get folks from like the Philippines who are willing to, you know, deal with those kind of like horrible work conditions.
It's like borderline indentured servitude. It's horrible.
An investigation by Univision and Columbia University's journalism school referred to them as sweatshops on the high seas. So,
let's bail them out.
I mean, and Wiseman says like, yeah, let them go bankrupt. Let them go bankrupt and have, hedge funders pick them up. And then if they want protection in the future, they're going to have to, sort of work within a greater regulatory scheme and start paying taxes. Why should we bail out companies that aren't even American?
They're also, by the way, I mean, the environmental footprint of those things are shocking. I mean, they are so environmentally destructive. And it's and again, it's not like we all need to fly less and we need to redesign. You know, the airline industry needs to be more efficient. There needs to be less flights, all of that. But we know like there are going to be flights in the world. Right. Like that's something that we're going to manage. This could be something just completely eliminated. It's like, okay, yeah, you can't eat a kebab on the high seas during Aladdin night while you terrorize like an undocumented worker in a cruise that's polluting like the Caribbean Ocean and causing more greenhouse gas emissions than an airliner. Like, let's just not do that. Let's stop.
Let's hit this, the DPA briefly, and then we'll go to the fun half. This is, let's start with this. This is clip number 5. Britt Hume, who I believe also, yesterday it was, called for, you know, people over the age of 70 to, you know, suck it up, take one for the team. Well, take them all for the team, I guess. And, you know,
take all and everything for the team.
Yeah. Like, the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, it's just amazing the way that these people are just like the way that they can pivot from like, we must protect, you know, death panels, the idea that you couldn't, you know, at the end of life, you couldn't choose. We would have some form of rational application of care is a death panel. But in this instance, like, well, look, we got a stock market's tanking. So, you know, throw grandma under the bus, essentially. I will say this, and we got a clip of Glenn Beck saying the same thing. As soon as I see these guys in the hospital changing bedpans without without masks and this and that, I'm going to give this a second thought. But here's Brett Hume sort of waxing poetic on why people are mad about Trump's COVID-19 response. Is it the fact that less than a month ago, weeks ago, he was calling this a hoax? What, is it the fact that he's refusing to release unemployment funds? Is it the fact that he's refusing to tell companies to produce stuff for Americans? No, that's not it. Play this clip.
Look, the mortality rate from this is higher enough that it makes it alarming. So it's obviously a much more a special kind of case. But there we are. You know, we don't shut down the economy to save every single life that's threatened by a widespread disease. We just don't.
Why do you think saying that? I mean, what you're saying is factually true. There's no precedent for doing that. And we faced a lot of epidemics over the years. I'm not even taking a position on where we ought to go next. But just stating that out loud, why do you think that enrages so many people? Sincerely.
Well, I can't know that. I can't read the minds of people I don't know. But there's one thing I do suspect in all of this in terms of the reactions to it. We are living in a country in which people's reactions to nearly everything have something to do when you drill down with how they feel about Donald Trump. And to the extent that what the lieutenant governor said on your air last night is similar to in overall message to what Donald Trump has been saying, I think some of the reaction to it may flow from that.
Can you imagine Michael, if Barack Obama said, you know, maybe it's time for just like people over the age of 70, just you take one for the team. Can you imagine like the near universal
white people over 70?
what president, what a government official could get on television and say, I mean, what they did in Virginia, let's remember what they did in Virginia with like the idea of just not resuscitating a stillborn, fetus. Life is so precious to them. Unless you're over 70 in the stock market's like a problem. We have not ever faced a global pandemic since the Spanish flu. And that killed hundreds of thousands of Americans.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I mean, there is I think there is actually a reciprocal problem, because I do think there is a tendency among certain, first of all, big picture, you're 100% right. Secondly, people sometimes definitely all make everything about Trump. Even this, as an example, Trump is doing this, and that's the most important because he's the chief executive. But again, particularly in a kind of upmarket sense, it's extraordinarily dangerous that Lloyd Blankfein is tweeting this and Thomas Friedman is writing a column on this. And Andrew Cuomo reversed himself wisely, actually attacked Trump on this today. But he hinted at something like this himself a couple of days ago. We need to ruthlessly go at anybody who would say this. And of course, starting at Trump, because he's the president of the United States.
All I'm saying is, if you are going to call for this, then you need to lead. Need to go out there and you need to contract the thing. And the best way to do it, go into the hospital, help out for a couple of days, no mask, no protective gear whatsoever. You need to lead.
Beck personally goes to the hospital, or Britt Hume personally goes to the hospital, I will be the first to use every platform I have to praise them.
Right. And I will call for people. Let's say we'll just start with we'll start with like over 80 or 90, and then we'll move down, and hopefully we don't get down to below 50. If we get to 50, I'm going to be a little bit concerned. Right. It's unbelievable. These people are just nuts. They're just nuts. This is like it's like complete dystopian. But let's talk just for a moment about the Defense Production Act. There's a couple of things that are going on, and we mentioned this yesterday, but this is really bears repeating. What the president could do under the Defense Production Act, it's like a series of executive actions, essentially, that it gives him. Well, first of all, it gives him the license. Just the analogy, you have a license to drive, but he's refusing to get into the car and actually drive. So he signed the bill. He could do these things. What he could do is it gives emergency authority of the federal government to make purchases, offer loan guarantees for purchases in order to create good demand for goods that manufacturers might not otherwise produce, like respirators. Okay. I'm afraid of if that's the case, or let's say if he had done this 6 months ago, or even three weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago, or 5 weeks ago, or really 2 months ago is where he could have done this easily. I am going to authorize loan guarantees for you to produce 5 million masks. It's a 2-month turnaround. We may not need them in 5 months. I mean, 2 months, we'll store them ourselves. I will promise you, you will not lose money making these things. That's what it is, basically. You will not lose money making these. We will guarantee all loans, all that stuff. And it could be other medical equipment, whatever it is, but that's just an example. It also means that the president can issue a declaration that certain goods are essential, which gives federal contracts priority over the other orders. A perfect example of this would be what happened to Pritzker, and this is happening to governors across the country without a doubt. He was looking for ventilators from a CEO, and they don't name the company in this piece from Washington Post. CEO told him that Illinois might have to wait for the ventilators not because the company wasn't producing them, but because the company might sell the newly assembled units to a foreign customer first because he's being outbid.
Yep.
This is, like I said yesterday, this is like going on eBay and trying to get this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the federal government saying, hey, we need these in Illinois. We need these in New York. We need these in Washington. We need these in Florida. We need these here. You're going to sell them. We're first in line. You're not going to lose any money. I guess maybe you'll lose the money that you would have had to price gouge because you're going to be able to bid up the prices. But we're going to, you're going to make this for us. We're going to tell you where it goes. You get a price of production plus a reasonable markup. So you're still going to make money. You're going to increase your capacity. And that's what would happen. And Donald Trump is not doing this because the Chamber of Commerce in the United States is very simple. We want our members to be able to price gouge.
Yep.
We want the price of what the ventilator, I will tell you this right now, in the absence of this, there is no doubt in my mind. And under this authority, they could have gotten loans, low-cost loans that would have been guaranteed to expand. If they're spending any more money in ramping up their production capacity, they would have gotten that covered. There is no doubt in my mind, the cost of these ventilators is significantly more than it was 6 weeks ago. They are enabling price gouging by not doing this. And they're denying, we have no cohesive, rational way other than the highest bidder, and not every state has the money available to distribute. You know, like that's what they say. The market will always make sure that resources are distributed where they're needed the most. This is a perfect example of where that's not going to function.
So utterly delusional.
So,
and it's not just, I mean, this story talked about a foreign competitor. It's state to state. I mean, you have governors publicly saying, like, we thought we just scored, you know, particularly in New York, it's a problem. It's a problem everywhere. We thought we just had a deal for, you know, 1,000 ventilators. Called the company back 20 minutes later to lock it down. Oh, sorry. You just got outbid. I mean, this is happening in real time, like right now, across state lines. Forget even a federal a federal intervention in the context of you know, outside the country. This is a state to state thing.
Oh, right. No. The point is that the federal government could come in and say, your company is going to produce this under the federal auspices. We're going to tell you where it goes because we have a comprehensive awareness as to where the needs are.
Yeah, we see the whole map, and this is where it needs to be rapidly deployed. And any government, you know, just a very narrow case about China, it's a much bigger conversation, but like they've contained it because they've literally built new hospitals in matters of days and because they command and commandeer resources where they need to go. And in that extremely narrow sense, that's what you need. It's just not debatable.
Lastly, there are companies that are stepping up and volunteering to help. General Motors and Ford, we mentioned this yesterday. Ford is working with General Electric to make ventilators. Apparently, they're like taking fans that were built in for the F-150s or something and converting them into, it's interesting.
It's actually pretty fascinating, yeah.
But the earliest they're going to come off is June. Okay, so we're now at the end. So think about it this. Okay, April, May, June, 2.5 months. In January, late January, I was starting to think about buying a little bit extra food. I'm a little bit preppery, you know. I mean, I think people know this about me a little bit, but you know, I was just like, you know, I started to buy more beans, buy a little more rice. I'm just going to start to build up. If I had that level of awareness from just reading about it, the federal government more than likely had the ability to assess this. If they had started, a month ago, they'd have this stuff by the end of April in 3 or 4 weeks. If they had started 2 months ago, they'd have it by almost now. And it would start to, these things would start to roll off. I mean, this is a huge failure, and it's not surprising at all. We've already talked about how Donald Trump and John Bolton and the rest of the Republican people basically took out the leadership of the pandemic response team, took them off the National Security Council.
I don't like to waste money.
Their whole, yeah, it's a waste. I don't want that guy.
Money.
Yeah. Talking at the National Security Council. From 2005 to 2017, the Department of Homeland Security had an office that, with analysts and supercomputers at several national laboratories, produced detailed analysis of what would happen to everything from transportation systems to hospitals if a pandemic hit the United States. This is called computer modeling. The work abruptly stopped in 2017 amid a bureaucratic dispute over its value, two of the former officials said, leaving the department flat-footed as it seeks to stay ahead of the impacts of COVID-19 outbreak. In other words, this is the way that it goes. Like, and I think people are starting to realize this on their own personal level, right? Like, first it's like, okay, oh, I realize that. Let me put it this way. If you had a computer model as an individual in your household, what you would realize is toilet paper is going to be one of the first things it sells out. Hand sanitizers and toilet paper. And so what you would do is you would, I'm keeping an extra supply of toilet paper. You know, I'm buying it in good times. I always have an extra, you know, box of toilet paper in my house. I always have like an extra 5 hand sanitizers in my house or something like that because of my computer models that show that in an event of something like this, we're going to need toilet paper and hand sanitizers. And then it's ramen and rice and whatever it is. Maybe I need extra freezer capacity, whatever it is. That's what a computer model tells you on a society-wide level. We're going to need, if this happens, we're going to need plans for schools to teach remotely. We're going to need plans for the supply chain of these things and that things and this thing. And they got rid of it.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of ideological lessons here too. I mean, the analog is in the UK, where they still have a little bit more sort of activity. They have a unit that goes back to the Tony Blair days, but it survived to this day, where the whole idea is that we have behavioral economics and we can just nudge people. Big problems can be solved in small ways. This is like a Cass Sunstein book that Obama right. loved. And this is one of the units that generated while the rest of the world, or continental Europe is overreacting and putting people into self-isolation, we're going to isolate vulnerable people. And, you know, somehow you do that because vulnerable people don't have like family members and other interactions. You can just isolate them. And also we're going to teach schools how to do different wipe down methods. And that will be our nudge. And of course that produced, you know, now Britain essentially is in a soft form of martial law, partially because they did this nonsense for a couple of weeks and it allowed them to produce a much bigger problem. I think the upfront is they are allowing price gouging because it's the Republicans. And of course, and I also think though, and I can't get this Thomas Friedman column out of my head because this is the first Friedman column I've read seriously in years. I've treated him just, it's a joke. I was like, you know what? I want to know what the sort of like, what the thinking man's excuse, you know, because this is what some, this is like, hey, I don't like Trump. I read the New York Times, but I think we ought to get back to work. I want to know what experts he talked to. And, you know, and he did. He found some people with prestigious affiliations to sort of feed this narrative. And what really struck me, some of the most cynical, like, you know, it's also really bad for people's health and it disproportionately affects poor people, that they're worried about their rent and their food. So we got to factor that in. And the whole time you're reading it, Tom, just use your column to advocate for Rashida Tlaib's bill. Done. People's suffering is alleviated and we take care of the healthcare crisis. And I think across all these domains, there is a sense, explicit or implicit, that, you know, we don't want to teach people that, you know, actually we could just solve these problems through social provisions or, you know, yeah, certain supply lines should be nationalized. They should at very least be localized and resilient. And, you know, for even beyond price gouging, I mean, there's some things that should be local and accessible and readily available and not subject to these complexities, frankly. And I think that part of what's going on here is they can't do some of the obvious answers because the obvious answers, you know, they expand outwards. Like, why can't we always do that?
Exactly. All right. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program where we will do some more sound. Jamie, hopefully will call in. We'll have her on the line too. And Just a reminder, this program relies on support from you. We have a new process now. If you are someone who cannot, if you're a member, and we've had some folks who have had to cancel because of a lot about what we've been talking about today. If you're a member and you have to cancel, head over there. We have some options for you on the cancellation page. It'll take care of that now automatically. If you have canceled previously, we will get back to you and hook you up within the next couple of days. If you are someone who wants access to the show, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Give us a little time. We will help you out. But if you're one of those folks who has the resources right now to support the program and you've been meaning to do it, by all means, now is a great time to do that. We're keeping everybody on staff. We're doing the AM Quickie. You can sign up for that and listen to that, or you can watch it on our YouTube channel for that matter too now. But the AM Quickie, it's put out every morning, amquickie.com, or you can get it on Stitcher or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, don't forget, check out the Noma Key Show, patreon.com/the Noma Key Show, or on YouTube, the Noma Key Show. I think Noma Key is going to be with us on Friday. She's going to join us. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. I got 10 pounds coming to me right now as we speak.
Nice.
I think I'm getting it tomorrow, so I'm pretty psyched about that.
That's sweet.
Michael, TMBS happened last night.
Yeah, TMBS happened last night. I'll say, you know, similarly, if you've been waiting and you can, great time to go to patreon.com/TMBS. And we always, you know, this has actually always been the case, but a little bit more explicitly, you know, if you need some kind of deal, obviously let us know. We'll help you out for sure. We talked with Ronan Burton Shaw about the coronavirus in the UK and some of the kind of broader global implications of it. How do we start to expand the social state and shrink the surveillance state? Seems to be the kind of big, important frame that we need to explore. Milton Alamadi talked with us about what the World Bank did to African health systems in the context of the pandemic. We also talked about China's Belt and Road Initiative and did a deep dive on the bailouts. We're doing a massive amount of extra content and Patreon content. So go and subscribe at our YouTube channel, subscribe on iTunes, or go to the Patreon page. And I'll just say real quick, you know, my book is available for pre-order. It's coming out April 28th. So if you want to check that out, Against the Web, The Cosmopolitan Answer to the New Right, you can check that out as well.
All right. Check out The Antifada. You can check that out. Maybe Jamie will mention it when she jumps on, but you can check it out at patreon.com/TheAntifada. I know they had new episodes last week. Matt?
Yeah, check out Literary Hangover, folks. I want to start streaming some stuff, so look up, subscribe to the YouTube channel. There you go.
All right, quick break. Head into the fun half. Hey, Matt, can you hear me?
Left is best.
Matt? Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube. Sign off.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I'm not 5G your employee. Wi-Fi.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
Sorry, I didn't mean to upset you.
You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
That's a good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457.
Same length?
2, 38, 56, 27.
One half. I'll be right 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some
can you hear me?
Of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.